Hello and welcome to Resource Report, where we share with you important information about local nonprofits and resource organizations that support the community we share, produced by Pathways to Agency.
I am your host, Rainmaker. Today's show features Chris Hyde, creator of Super Sunday, cooking soup in his home kitchen in an Eastside Olympia neighborhood, giving it away for free. Here's Chris.
I'm here with Chris Hyde in his kitchen, Super Sunday guy. And I want to say I've seen a lot of your, maybe all of them, I'm not sure, but a lot of your news articles. You've been on MSN, King 5, Como, and Thurston Talk. Mm-hmm. But there are still people who don't know you are here. I didn't even know you were here until a friend like texted me, oh, hey, you might want to interview this guy,
yeah.
You know, and that was exciting.
Here's something really exciting.
Do you ever think that you would be doing this?
No way.
No.
Until the day I had the idea.
Yeah.
I didn't. It's one of those things that you wouldn't really think of ahead of time unless it happens to you, maybe. So, you know, I've always been involved in, like, I've got a garden and I love growing food and sharing it with neighbors, that kind of thing. I love cooking with people. But this seemed to take. And I also do, you know, some work just on the side with the homeless, gathering clothes and needful things over mm-hmm. the past several years. But this seems to have taken all of that and wrapped it up into this one really cool project that people are really responding to. So I get a lot of inspiration from the Buy Nothing group, the Upper East Side group, and just the kind of giving and receiving without an expectation of anything. And that group here is really good. People are really dedicated to it. It's a well-run group. And kind of how I got my start doing soup, I was cleaning out my freezer. I've got some housemates here, and there's always, you know, kind of competition for room in the freezer and the fridge. And I had a bunch of soups from a few months before that were frozen, and I put them on the Buy Nothing group. And people were really into it. You know, I never had any problem giving the soups away. And there was something about that that sort of sparked the idea of Super Sunday. Like, I could do this full time and actually put effort into making soups that I'm giving away instead of just giving away ones that were taking up freezer space.
This could be a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So you just mentioned about the open giving and receiving mm-hmm. aspect. And wanted to talk about that, like the concept of not just for certain demographics, but for everyone. Like, people, you know, have an idea in their head of where they are at and think that that's for other people. I don't need that.
That's such a good point.
You know, and that's an interesting concept that it's strange. It shouldn't be so strange that people have a hard time thinking of something, you know, in that way that, oh, this could be for everyone, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the governor, Inslee, could come and have soup, for an example.
Or Bill Gates. He'd be
right.
As welcome as anybody else.
Well,
I'm thinking more like maybe we could teach him something.
I think
about
that's
community.
I agree.
And that's the whole thing. It's not
community.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows? You know, some of those guys, maybe they've never really thought in terms of the sacredness of community and connecting
deep
with people.
Healing.
Yeah.
Deep healing and being open for, like, anyone,
yeah.
You know?
I'm certainly not. I've got a lot of issues with billionaires and people hoarding money and behaving badly. But part of this concept and group is, I don't know, sort of beyond my normal thought. It's sort of like a higher an ability to see humanity in people who maybe you're not thinking they have any humanity. Because maybe it's stuck in there and, you know, they've just been caught up so much in making money and being in certain circles that, but I have hope for pretty much everybody that, you know, I do believe, people who kind of like the Christmas story, you know, kind of coming around to the idea that humanity is the focus and it's kind of my religion, is trying to see the humanity in people as much as possible. And there's something about this group that really brings out positive things in people. Mm-hmm. So to come full circle, I would love to have somebody come who is maybe questionable, as long as they don't behave badly. You know, it's one thing I don't put up with is hateful rhetoric and divisive behavior. So, mm-hmm. but that's a symptom of humanity, mm-hmm. human beings and their flaws. And it can be a super poor person or it could be a super rich person.
Toxic people just really need deep, deep, deep healing.
I think so, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm really a big advocate of people's bad behavior. The great majority, you know, we have free will, but the great majority of it is just unhealed people. Yeah. People who have not addressed their trauma, and instead of going inward, they go outward and blame everything around them and every person around them for whatever their inadequacy is. But this is a rough world in a lot of ways. There are a lot of sharp edges, and none of us come out of it without some injury. Mm-hmm. And I think the most important thing we can do is address that. And part of addressing it is to first just be able to recognize the humanity in others. And the more that you do that, you can recognize the humanity in yourself. I have a discipline now of trying to give people the benefit of the doubt, which can be really hard. And of course, you have to be smart about it. You know, you don't want to get in a dangerous situation or, you know, make yourself vulnerable to somebody who doesn't have your best interests at heart. But my life has gotten way better since I just generally give people a break and the benefit of the doubt. Because if you don't, you almost create a dynamic where the person is gonna fall into that concept, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So, just trying to focus on people's humanity. And there's something about, you know, there's a sacredness about sharing food, making and sharing food with people. You know, I call it the sacred circle of giving and receiving. And I'm a pretty cynical person, so it's hard for me to even say that. But it's been an interesting thing for me to challenge my own cynicism and my shadow side and to be able to acknowledge really positive things, because it's so easy to be a cynic in this world. And you put yourself in a difficult spot as far as, you know, seeing everything through the lens of cynicism and darkness and everything, things terrible, you know. It's, and I couldn't do this if I hadn't been willing to challenge my cynicism and really deeply question it. So I'm in the process of writing, almost done actually, an illustrated children's cookbook that's going to feature the soups. And each of the soups has its own animal that represents a soup. And in order to, you know, I've written a lot of stuff, fiction and all kinds of stuff. But in order to write a children's book, you know, you can't really bring your cynicism to that. It's much more like you have to think like a kid, and you want to treat them, you know, you treat them as children and not, you know, like little grown-ups or something. So it's been an interesting challenge for me to write this and think in terms of a childlike thought. And, you know, children aren't naturally cynics. So that's been a fun exercise for me too, to sort of challenge my own snarkiness and my own dark side.
This is a healing journey for you as well.
It totally is, yeah. It's been, like I never would have imagined being where I am now and this kind of just exploding. It's the first time in my life where I felt like I'm in exactly the right spot at exactly the right time. And I'm able to share it with others. And I wouldn't be anything without the group members, because it's not about me. It's about this, the energy that is made, produced by this group, where it's larger than the sum of its parts, kind of. You know, you create this, I don't know how to describe it. Like, I'm not a religious person. I've got my own kind of spiritual beliefs about things, but there is something about that connection with people in community doing something altruistic, where it makes them just as happy to donate or make soup as it does for them to get it. And the more there's a free flow between those things, those dynamics, it's almost like it raises the energy level.
Yeah. I have a friend who is very much interested in moving back towards a sort of barter system of giving and receiving.
I'm
community.
A huge advocate of bartering.
Yeah, and this what you're doing reminds me very much of his philosophy and what he talks about wanting to do that. I think that also is a healing structure if we can move away, perhaps, from money, you know.
Yeah, the more we can do that, the better.
You know, then there's more community involvement.
That was a big part of the message, too, when I kind of got that calling. I'll just call it a calling because it's the closest I can, you know, describe it. Part of it was that there should be absolutely no money involved, so no financial donations.
Yeah, I noticed that in the articles that you aren't receiving money, but you'll get, like, gift cards.
That's
for
correct.
Grocery stores.
Or people will drop off food.
Mm-hmm.
And that way they're more connected to the process. That way I'm not, you know, it's not going to affect my finances. And it is getting back to just the idea of bartering, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
There is a connection there. You know, somebody, it's not a tit for tat kind of bartering, but, you know, somebody gets soup for a couple of months and then they feel like, hey, I've got a little bit of extra money, so I'm going to buy a, you know, $25 gift card to give to Super Sunday, or they bring over a bag of groceries or whatever it is. And I think part of the reason that maybe I got that message was to back off of the idea of dollar per dollar thinking, you know, dollar for, you know, whatever your time or effort is, it's got this monetary value. And it's kind of been a dehumanizing thing for our Western culture. I mean, I get it. I'm not naive about money and having to make money. It's just, you know, that structure's there and it's not going to go away. But we can do things in our life, I think, to mitigate it. Bartering is one way. Super Sunday is another way. And I do need to mention also that there are a lot of groups who are doing similar things to what I'm doing, and even groups in Olympia. And it's not, you know, There's a lot of, you know, everybody knows that homeless people and low-income people need food more than other people do. You know, it's such a common basic need. But it doesn't mean that other people should be outside the process. So since that's a real known, there are a lot of people who cater to that part of it. And I do too. You know, I'll feed anybody. But there is something connective about not having those boundaries so that people who are not desperate can also enjoy soup and the community that the soup brings.
You live literally 2 minutes from my house. I feel like that would be such a fabulous convenience some nights to just run over here and grab a couple soups for everybody, because
absolutely,
I just don't have the spoons to do anything for supper. But I mean, you know, that's just really helpful. Like, you know, like,
yeah,
even though, you know, we normally have the ability, it's like, sometimes it's just, you just need that break.
Yeah. I do free grocery days twice a week and I've learned a lot about people and their needs. I don't want to say you shouldn't have to be starving to get fed. It shouldn't be like you're on death's door to get a meal. There is that kind of thinking here in the United States and Western civilization. But, you know, back up from that and think, like, you know, everybody, there are people certainly who can afford their own food and have great diets and, you know, have enough money to be able to buy food. There are a great number of people who cannot do that. So I started a foundation. It was approved 2 weeks ago. So it's called the Food Source Foundation. And that came out of a specific need that I saw in giving groceries away for the last 6 months. That's more the grocery part of it. I see it as the soup is like breaking bread with neighbors and community, and you know, anybody can have it. And I'll give food to anybody either way, groceries or not. But the groceries are a little bit more for people who, like you and a lot of people who have run out of their EBT allotment and
can't get to the food bank when they're open.
If, so the thing, there are a lot of different stories, but the one that came back again and again and again was this idea of somebody working full time and making $20 to $25 an hour, and their income can't keep up with the soaring rent and cost of living. So I'm talking to people who 60, 70, even 80% of their total income goes to rent. And then they've got a car payment, maybe there's a kid involved. And by the beginning of the month, when those bills are paid, it's always food that's the last thing that you end up buying for, you know, whatever reason. And they're either going without food, they're making too much money to be able to government benefits. And there's this whole, like, working poor, this class of the working poor who are in a desperate situation as far as their food security goes. And like I said, with my group, I it's important to not leave anybody out. So anybody who's homeless or low income or whoever, I'll give them food and support them however I can. But people just don't know that there's this growing problem of food insecurity amongst people who are working full time. And a big part of the foundation was I wanted to shine a light on that. Because like I was saying before, we kind of all know that people who are homeless and low income, it's, you know, they're always in need of food. So one of the things I do is I make these healing broths that are really popular with all kinds of stuff in them. Like beef bone. I do my own beef bone, just about out, but I add a lot of different, you know, turmeric and black pepper and a whole host of things, ginger. And there's a local mushroom company that I'm not supposed to mention their name, but they support me with really high quality mushroom powders of different kinds.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So
all of that is so, so healing.
It is. Yeah.
Food
is medicine. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I got sick a couple of weeks ago, right before I took my break, and somebody had given me a bottle of fire cider. So I was taking that, and then kind of, I hadn't really even used my own broth, healing broth yet, because I hadn't been sick for like a couple of years. But I did that for a couple of days, and it really, I think, lowered my symptoms. And this is a flu that people like have for 2 weeks, and it makes them miserable. Mm-hmm. But in eating right and like vitamin C and all this stuff, I really feel like it mitigated the effect of the flu symptoms.
Absolutely, absolutely. So one thing I noticed was I hadn't seen anything anywhere about ingredient lists or finding out about, like, do you have gluten and dairy free? Do you mention anything like East African peanut soup? Definitely has a peanut allergy thing going on.
Yeah.
Like, people have dietary restrictions. Like,
yeah. So, like, and I think it's important to point out that, and I really hate this term, beggars can't be choosers.
Sure.
Because people who are homeless or poor or low income, food insecure, they all have all the same intolerances as somebody who's, you know, mm-hmm. can afford to pick and choose their diet. So mm-hmm. I'm very careful about when I list a soup, I list all the ingredients. Mm-hmm. When I'm giving groceries away, I ask people if they have any allergies or food restrictions. They can either pick stuff that has or has not gluten or dairy, or some people have are allergic to black pepper and mm-hmm. Tomato products and all that kind of thing. So it's really important to be able to meet people where they are.
Yeah.
With the caveat that you can't please everybody all the time.
You're going to make what you can make, and mm-hmm. at least you just put the information out there and they can find what they can have or not have.
Yeah. And a lot of people are vegans, which I think is mm-hmm. great. I think probably plant-based diet is the healthiest diet you can possibly do, although that's not what I eat necessarily all the time. I am a carnivore. One of the things I do, I'll make a big batch of soup, and I'll always keep, you know, 6 or 8 soups at the end of it. And I put them in my freezer, so I've got what I call the soup library. So I've got a freezer full of soups that are vegan, vegetarian, meaty, seafoody, you know, just depending on the soups in there. Mm-hmm. And that way, if somebody is food insecure, they can just message me, and maybe they're vegan or whatever their dietary restriction is, I usually have frozen soup that can serve them.
Yeah, so like if your soup of the day that's sitting out on the porch for people to come and grab, you know, is it something that they could have? They could message you and mm-hmm. let me see what I've got in the soup library. Yeah. Oh, look, I've got this for you.
Yep.
That's perfect.
It's as simple as that.
That's fabulous.
Yeah. And that's, you know, come from months of experience and kind of trial and error. And I think it's important to be able to not have my own agenda food-wise. The part of my agenda that I am willing to have is as healthy a soup or food as I can make with the ingredients I have on hand. So I'm a big advocate of whole foods, non-processed foods. So the soups I make are all from scratch, and they're really good quality. They're really good quality and super healthy. And that's important in the food that I make. But I also realize that there are people who are really working a lot and working hard. And as far as food ingredients go, you know, I have no control over the food that I, or the ingredients that I put in soup. But when I'm giving away groceries, I try to keep it as healthy as possible. But it's important to recognize that, you know, if you're a single mom and you're hardworking, you can't necessarily take 2 hours to make a meal at night mm-hmm. Or during the day. So some convenience foods are maybe the only thing they're going to be able to eat. So, you know, I try to keep my own like food dogma out of it and just realize that, you know, it's, I threw away some Cheese Whiz the other day because I just can't ethically feel like,
Cheese whiz is not food.
It's yeah, not absolutely. Food. Like I said, under the circumstances, you have to meet people where they're at. Mm-hmm. And I just try to keep it as healthy as possible. So I posted something yesterday on Super Sunday about just making like a handful of pinto beans with cilantro and a pinch full of salt. Those simple 3 ingredients mm-hmm. and how completely satisfying that can be and like really flavorful. And then I added some fresh garlic to that and I was like, wow, it's over the moon tasty for these 4 ingredients. And most people are just used to foods that have dozens and dozens of ingredients in it, and their taste buds are probably just, you know, like have been so overstimulated.
Yeah. I certainly relate to that. I've had a tendency for quite a very long time to season anything that has any kind of meat or fish with the same things. I have, I'm not creative with food. This is my formula that works. I mm-hmm. stick to it. And then a few years ago, for the first time in my life, had my very first real in-the-ground garden.
Oh, nice.
Yes. Every year is a different year with it. But 3 years ago, I started. I'm so proud of this. And I have my herb garden. I had parsley that grew so huge.
Yeah, parsley's
and I
great.
Had sage and rosemary and thyme and all the things. And I started seasoning with fresh herbs from my garden. So healing.
Yeah. People who are eating, you know, McDonald's all the time or whatever, they just haven't had the experience. Mm-hmm. And the vegetables that they eat, they do eat generally, you know, like the tomato that's going to be on top of a Big Mac is going to be almost flavorless.
With, like, no nutrition in it.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, this conversation about nutrients in foods goes directly into the conversation about agriculture and how we grow and use the land and all that. If your ground is depleted of nutrients, what do you think is going to happen to the vegetables growing out of it?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, monoculture.
It's a big issue. Where do you get all of the food that you are using for your soups? I read something about you have your own garden.
I do. I've had a garden for almost 20 years. And I've got more garden space than I can handle these days. So one of the things I'd like to do is get, I don't know, a couple of people who want to learn about gardening and help me, you know, be able to get the most I can.
More gardening space than you can use. Is that what I heard you say?
Yes.
I'm having trouble understanding this concept of having more garden than you can use. I don't, help me.
It's a matter of time. I mean, imagine if you had a two-acre garden, you know, there's no way you could.
Not having enough time to make use of it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there we go.
Time enough, yeah. That would be the only reason.
I know,
I'm following you. So we have a front garden. It used to be grass out there.
And I saw that's kale or chard coming up. I saw
the kale, Lacinato kale. Is first time I've grown it, and it's provided so much kale. It's an entire 4 by 10 foot bed, and since the spring, well, I guess more like June, it really started growing, and they look like palm trees, kind of, because you cut the lacinato from the side of the plant, and it keeps on growing and growing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've gotten June, July, August, September, October, November, December, January, 5, 6, 7, almost 8 months worth of consistent kale. And that's great. So yeah, I started in 2010. I decided to dig up all the grass and put in garden beds in the front. And that did a couple of really interesting things. One was that I was out in the front lot, so I met my neighbors in a way that I had never met them before. Like a lot of, you know, unless you walk around a lot and kind of meet people out and about, it's easy to not really have contact with your neighbors. So that kind of brought me out in front, and then people will ask me questions about gardening, and it really did kind of initiate a certain community connection. And it's also really convenient for me to just walk out the front door and be able to get vegetables to use for soups or for myself or whatever. Probably my favorite thing is when I see a family go by with a kid or two, and the kids are fascinated, and the parents start to explain, like, the origin of food. This is where, you know, the stuff you've been eating, this is where it starts. It actually grows out of the ground, and there are a lot of little kids who don't know that.
Yeah, all the apples came from the grocery store.
Exactly, yeah. So that's a great thing. I think it's one of the best things you can do. I've never had kids of my own, but so who am I to give advice to? But I've seen the way that kids react to gardens and gardening and the growing process and how it really brings something out in them. And it's just a great education and healthy, and there's everything good about it.
Yeah, my youngest was at Lincoln Options Elementary for a little while, mm-hmm. and they have a big garden there, and all the students, all the parents, everybody volunteers in the Lincoln school community, and not everybody, but like you can, that's a thing you can do is volunteer mm-hmm. to help in the Lincoln Community Garden.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's the same thing. It's like the kids are learning and they're seeing how everything's growing.
Yeah.
So cool. Yeah.
It is.
There's a community garden in this neighborhood.
There is, yeah.
Yeah, it's like on the other side of your block, kind of.
Yep, there's a church back there, and I'm not a huge church person, but they really do good things.
So is that, that's their community garden? Oh, okay.
But yeah, they're good. They're really altruistic, and so they have a community garden that you could be part of. They planted a lot of fruit trees and have been mm-hmm. open to suggestions from the community about that kind of thing.
Have you participated in that community garden? Have you gotten any donations of vegetables from there?
You know, on and off from people. I'm always so busy with my own garden.
Yeah. How do you develop your recipes? Do you have any old family heirloom recipes?
Not exactly. Most of the recipes I've done have been based in like the Moosewood cookbook, but then I'll go to the internet and go to All Recipes, or, you know, just poke around and see the different things that people are using, the variations on the recipes. So, their recipes are like these kind of living things that I'll figure out. Like recently, it's been how important vinegar is in soups.
Really?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
It's an acid. So there's that book about salt, acid, fat. There are four things. I'm liking on the fourth one. But the soup is really improved with that level of acid. And you don't really taste it as vinegar, but it can really improve the complexity and overall taste of the soup. One of the things I've learned over the past few months, in addition to my soup making, is to add an acid, which would be like a vinegar of some kind. And I made a vegan lentil soup a few months ago, and I did everything right. You know, I like to saute vegetables to caramelize them before mm-hmm. I add them to the soup, and that really develops the taste profile. It's just more...
Yeah, I read about that in an article. I was like, that's interesting. And I think I might start trying that.
Yeah, it takes longer, but it's definitely worth it. So I made this this soup, and it just was missing something. And I had a friend who had recently told me, like, trying to add vinegar to soups to sort of change the flavor. So I added half a cup of vinegar, apple cider vinegar, and it completely changed the soup. Mm-hmm. It was delicious. It was, the taste was much more complex and much more interesting and not kind of boring.
Mm-hmm.
And people have done that for, you know, hundreds or thousands of years probably, but I just wasn't aware of it until a few months ago. And that's really improved the quality of the soups, I think.
And the healing aspect, apple cider vinegar, balsamic yes. vinegar, any kind of vinegar is like good for the system.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The book Salt, Fat, Acid, and Heat by Salmon Nostrat is a really great book.
Whoa. Salmon by Samin Nostrat, Nosrat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great yeah. book. And it's a little bit sciencey sometimes, mm-hmm. but certainly worth the read because it talks about food intelligently and the balance of acid, salt, fat, and peppers, heat, that kind of thing.
Nice. Cool. So how are you doing with your nonprofit, or is that the foundation that you had mentioned?
That's the foundation.
Okay.
And it's just brand spanking new.
Yeah.
So the cool thing is I have a really great, enthusiastic team of group members who all have specific skills that are going to lend themselves to having a strong foundation for the foundation. The operations part of it.
Mm-hmm. And that's not this what you're doing in the kitchen with the free soups. Is that something, how are they related or separate? Or?
So the Food Source Foundation is going to be an umbrella group that will support other groups. So Super Sunday will be under the umbrella of the Food Source Foundation. I'm still working out the legalities of how I can contribute to other groups if they don't have the nonprofit status. I think I could get foodstuffs, but like donating money to them to buy food, you know, those are the things that we're going to be working out in the next couple of months. But it's basically going to be an umbrella organization that is going to address food insecurity in the greater Olympia area in any way we can. Yeah, so it's really exciting. I've got four grant writers. Yeah, I'm a big advocate of networking.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the Food Source Foundation. I think there are so many groups who are trying to feed people that probably don't talk to one another. Not for a bad reason, but just because they're so busy doing what they're doing. So that networking, and I'm working on with a website designer on a portal where it will have like all the different groups who are trying to feed people in the greater Olympia area, where they can check in and see where the gaps are and communicate easily with one another.
I love that.
Yeah.
Like a food resource hub.
Exactly.
That's fabulous.
Yeah.
I love that concept.
Yeah. So the Food Source Foundation, the mission statement is to address the growing problem of food insecurity in the greater Olympia area. So I left it vague because I knew we were going to grow into the situation. You can't know everything ahead of time. You have to do it and come up with, you know, roadblocks and figure the roadblocks out, see where there's a need where maybe you didn't imagine there was going to be a need. Like our food bank is a great food bank, but it's only open twice a week, I believe. And the lines are intimidating to a lot of people. Or if you're working full time, you can't necessarily take 2 or 3 hours off during the middle of the day to go get food because you're food insecure. Mm-hmm. So I see the Food Source Foundation as filling some of the gaps that are there. You know, there are a lot of people with, you know, all the goodwill in the world trying to feed people. And it's, you know, I would never criticize anybody, but nobody can do it all. But if we work together, we can have a really strong web to be able to support our community members with being able to eat healthy food on a regular basis.
Absolutely. How do people on your Facebook page and, you know, order soups?
So the process that I've come to, and again, it's always in flux. If I think of a new idea or learn something new or get feedback, I'm always willing to shift it a little bit. But basically what I do is I'll make a food during the day. I'm doing Tuesdays and Sundays now. And this time of year, when it gets dark so early, I'll have a soup ready at 4 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And I'll put a message out on my Facebook group, Super Sunday Facebook group, which now has like 3,500 members. So it's really, really grown. But most of those are like either out of state or, you know, they're not just in Olympia, Washington. So I don't get like 500 requests. But I'll put that a soup is ready at 4 o'clock and what kind of soup it is with the ingredients. I'll put a request window, which is usually like 4 to 5:30. And then people can request, and I'll approve their request and put soup out for them to pick up in the front.
So people just like it's a comment post?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
And for me, I've only got so much time, and I really need to have an economy of time and movement and effort. So that's what works best for me. Mm-hmm. During the week, I'll often have contributions of these kind of come through the food bank of Starbucks and other value-added meals, things that you could just eat, mm-hmm. donated, usually on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Or if I get a contribution of, like, you know, 100 pounds of potatoes and I can't go through all of them, I'll put a note out that they're on my front porch and come by when you can. Just kind mm-hmm. of a, you know, stop in when you can. Kind of situation, mm-hmm. as opposed to making requests all the time. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I have had to pay attention to is when I was first doing this, I was doing it 6 days a week, 7 days a week usually, because I just had so much raw energy for it for whatever yeah. reason.
After You're excited.
Yeah. And I still am. And I get a huge amount of feedback and energy from the group. But what's more realistic in my life now is having to make some parameters so that I'm not overextended, because mm-hmm. I can't feed everybody. And that's another reason I'm trying to proliferate the Super Sunday group is, you know, the more that we have out there, the more that we'll all be able to share in you know, the work and to ultimately feed more people.
So yes. Do you have to put up a comment request for soup to get soup, or can you like, oh, you see the post, oh, he's got soup out, and just like go? and find soup? How does that work?
Nope. I need to, people need to just respond to their request. So
it's important that you put a request out.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the way that's been working for me. Otherwise, all the soup is going to be gone quickly when people come over to pick it up. People maybe can't get off of work until 5:30 or whatever. So I have to be pretty focused on having people, respond to me, and I'll make a request, and then they'll make a request after I put the post out, and then I'll say, okay, your soup's going to be out there in 5 minutes.
Okay, so you keep the soup inside, and then you look at the requests, and then you make the soups, and you put the names, and you stick them out.
Yeah.
And then you just keep doing that as requests come in.
Yeah, I'll usually make the soup and put it in cardboard containers, the soup containers first before I make the post. And then I'll just have, 20 to 30 portions of soup.
Oh, yeah, and whatever's left over goes in the soup library.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Sweet. Okay.
There are different ways of distribution. The people who are doing the burrito, Super Sunday Burrito Edition, they're out there giving burritos away in person.
Okay.
Which is something that I would love to be able to do, but just the amount of time that I have, I can't really be out kind of schmoozing.
Yeah, you got to be in here cooking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot going on. Sometimes I'll have, all four burners on the stove and a crock pot going, and I really have to pay attention so I don't burn stuff or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then when everything is done, I have to have a certain amount of time to do the distribution process. Take the picture of the soup and take a picture of the ingredients. And there's a lot.
Maintaining the social media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then at the end of the day, I've got a mountain of dishes I have to do. And that's, here's another half hour. And then when I get off, I usually try to stop everything by 6 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And then I start working on messages and emails and working on documents to support the group and doing foundational stuff.
The administrative work, yeah.
Yeah, and fortunately, I love that stuff. I love every aspect of what I'm doing here with the group and the foundation, and it just all feels right to me and energizing. So I'm certainly not complaining, but it does take a lot of time and a lot of bandwidth. I've got my fifth satellite Super Sunday group that started yesterday in Simi, California.
Oh, I saw that Facebook post.
Yeah, and that just really, every time there's a new Super Sunday group, it does something to me. It just makes me really happy.
Other people starting chapters in their communities. How many? What is the process?
So let me talk just a little bit about the groups. So we've got five satellite groups now. Super Sunday Aberdeen, Super Sunday Pulse in Montana, Super Burrito, which is on the west side. So I had an idea of doing burritos, and somebody, a couple picked up on that idea and have been doing them on Mondays, and people are really loving that. Super Sunday Simi, California. I feel like there's one more that I'm forgetting maybe, but we've got basically five groups. Oh, and another one starting in downtown Olympia in the next couple of weeks. So this is from the beginning when it really started to take off. I realized that the efficacy of this would be much better. I can only serve so many people doing Super Sunday. But if you've got one in every neighborhood.
There was a mention of teaching materials.
Yeah, and that's something I have been meaning to do for the last 5 or 6 months. But my schedule is so busy, it's really hard to take time to, have 3 or 4 hours to write something out and rewrite it and edit it and that kind of thing. So, yes, I just recently finalized some teaching material that a friend of mine Rudy is going to, he's doing kind of a master's in teaching. So he's going to format it in a way that I'm not great at that kind of thing. I'm a good writer. I'm a strong writer, but formatting you know, where you've got bullet points and it's just simplified. Oh, yeah. That's a really important part of the process. Mm-hmm. But I did send that document to the first group, which started yesterday, the CME California group, and she was able to do everything just from that document.
Okay, so that was like a trial version.
Yeah, cool. Exactly. The trial balloon.
Cool. Man, you're branching out, getting started in all kinds of directions. What if anybody anywhere wanted to open up a Super Sunday? What would they do?
So I finally have this document together that I can send to people, which is just a real basic outline of how to do it. And it doesn't take long. If you're good with Facebook, you know, it can take 15 minutes to set the group up, something like that. And I have the rules and the mission statement and all that kind of stuff that people can copy and paste into it.
Okay.
And it's easy. And I really encourage people to start small, but just start. You know, I've got a new group downtown, and I think he's going to do it like once a month to start off. And that's great. You know, if you can feed 20 people once a month, that's 20 human beings who are getting a warm, delicious meal and also getting the benefit of feeling like they're being noticed and taken care of and acknowledged as human beings.
Absolutely.
And that's a really important part of it.
Yeah, and you said that guy was doing burritos, so it doesn't have to be soup.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily super, and it's not necessarily Sunday. So it can be misleading.
Yeah.
But that name has caught on, so I make sure that whoever's doing it has Super Sunday in the title so that you can do a Facebook thing and come up with like 5 or 10 or in the future hundreds of Super Sundays in their area. That's the goal. And it's part of what I'm going to do with the foundation is be able to have people who can work on that side of it. Because to do what I'm going to do is going to definitely take a village and then some. And I'm really just over the moon at the number of people who have volunteered now. I've got a volunteer list of like 25 people, all with different skills, who are eager to start. And one of the main things that we're looking for is, you know, I can't continue doing this from at the level I want to do it from my home, just because they're, you know, there's just so much space. Mm-hmm. So we're looking for a place that has, you know, like a walk-in refrigeration, and maybe a commercial kitchen and a place that we can distribute from.
So like a vacant restaurant?
Yes.
What people expect when they come to pick up their soup? What does that look like?
During summer, all the food is in, and this summer, I actually did solid food all summer instead of soup, which was fun and grueling, as it takes more time to make solid food portions than it does soup. So for the summer, I'll have a cooler out front with ice packs in it and like have a limited pickup time just because I don't want food to be sitting out there. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how foodborne illnesses start.
Right.
It's, you know.
So you're like, this is, you know, soup will be out from this time to this time.
Yeah.
And then at the end of that time, you bring it all in and put it in the soup library.
Kind of, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll leave stuff out there and people will pick it up. And generally, people will pick up everything. Occasionally, people don't pick up soup when requested, and it really bums me out because I've made, you know, put a lot of effort into it. So I'm really careful about explaining, like, if you're going to pick up a soup, you really need to pick it up because when I go out there and there's, you know, soup that's been sitting overnight or whatever, that's kind of a bummer.
So you, like, if somebody had, there's an order of soup with somebody's name on it.
Yeah.
So you'll just leave it there, even past the pickup time. Like, this is the time that I've allotted.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you'll leave it there for them.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I often don't go out. I mean, I'm really done at 6 o'clock. I don't want to deal with any more soup, anything, you know. Mm-hmm. At least, you know, the process. So sometimes I'll check and sometimes I won't. But it's really the responsibility of the person who's picking up the soup to, you know, I'm making free soup. The least you can do is, like, actually show up when I make a request.
Sure. Well, you never know what has happened, you know, why they didn't come.
No, it's true.
Yeah.
It's true. And you have to, And I'm totally understanding of people who, you know, had their car ran out of gas or something. There are like a million reasons, but right. You kind of need to contact me and let me know so I can save the soup.
Yeah.
Was funny early on. There was a guy who didn't pick soup up and I was kind of bummed about it. And then the next day, later on in the day, he was like, "Oh, I'm so sorry I didn't pick up the soup, but my wife went into labor."
Oh my goodness.
And I'm like, dude, that is a really good excuse. Like, no problem there. You know? It's just if people are like, "Oh, dude, I fell asleep," or "Dude, I forgot about it," that kind of thing. Like, yeah. That doesn't go over well. But I mean, the whole purpose is to give people food and to share in the community and the whole thing. So mm-hmm. I don't want to be a jerk about it.
Mutual accountability.
That's a good way to
put
it.
Communication.
Yeah. Yep. And it's kind of a contract, an unspoken contract. And I wrote about this in the document that I have for people who want to start their own groups, that mm-hmm. there is kind of an unwritten agreement that we sign into, that we're going to treat each other with respect. And I think I was writing in regards of, you know, it's important to treat people really well to the best of your ability. But there are times when people can be, their behavior is not good, and I don't have to put up with somebody who's trying to bully me or troll me or any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. I just unfriend them and ban them.
You know, earlier when we were talking about those things, I was thinking of the words compassionate boundaries.
Mm. Oh, good way to put it. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. It's like the medium or the modality that you use to facilitate this kind of community healing. Mm-hmm. It's like you've chosen the way of the soup.
Yeah.
The way of the soup.
The way of the soup. Wow, that's going to be my book. It'll be popular amongst like progressives. I can have a Zen thing. The way of the soup. I like that.
Okay.
I hope that people will go to Facebook and look up Super Sunday Food for All. That's the main group. And anybody's willing to join, you know, anybody's welcome to join. And the more people, the better. And I encourage people, we were talking a little bit earlier about accepting soup, even though maybe you can feed yourself and you've got money or whatever. That's not the point of the soup. And when I was first doing it, one of the most difficult things was to get people to show up who are employed and, you know, have money coming in and, you know, have enough money to feed themselves, because it wasn't about that necessarily. It was about the community part and just the sort of the magic of the circle of giving and receiving. People have to receive. If I was doing what I was doing and people didn't pick up soup or weren't interested, it would be awful, you know? So there has to be that part to it. So don't be shy, you know, join, request soup. Really, it's mostly, you know, for Olympia, Tumwater, Lacey, and the greater Olympia area. I do occasionally have people who come from Shelton or something. And,
wow.
Yeah, which is cool. They've actually made a trip
Your
for
soup
a couple
is
of
famous.
Soups. But, yeah. I'd say join. Don't be shy about requesting soup. One thing, we talked about the soup library. So if you're a group member and you need a soup, just message me directly and I can take a soup or two and leave it out for you in the red cooler out front. And it can be for any reason for anybody, you know, long day at work, or you're starting to feel sick, or you're depressed or whatever. It doesn't matter. Or you just want soup. It's for everybody and anybody.
Awesome. Come for the soup, stay for the community.
I think I'm going to hire you for
a poem.
Yeah, you are. Those are both great. Well, thank you so much. It's been a great interview.
Thank you so much.
I I really enjoyed conversing with Chris Hyde about Super Sunday in his cozy home at 1718 Bigelow Avenue Northeast. Of course, he sent me home with some soups from the soup library. We had lamb stew, roast beef and vegetable, spicy chili, and some East African peanut and tuna, which is apparently very popular. Make sure you find him on Facebook, give him a like and some support. Next time, we will hear from Megan Carlisle of Wild Grief. That's it for today's resource report, produced by Pathways to Agency. At Pathways to Agency, we are driven by the belief that everyone should have the tools and support to achieve their goals and thrive in their communities. Our mission is to bridge the gaps in understanding, accessibility, and trust by connecting individuals to resources and sharing information and processes that can lead to personal and community growth. Resource Report offers information about existing and emerging nonprofits and resource organizations. Find out more at pathwaystoagency.org. Also, for up to 2 weeks, you can still listen to today's show by going to chaosradio.org and finding the archive in the Programs drop-down in the menu. You can also find our shows archived indefinitely on rss.com. Chaos Radio is not responsible or liable for any views or opinions expressed in the interviews conducted by Resource Report. Till next time, and thanks for listening.